journey into the Bible and explore its hidden text and rich wisdom. Join Adel Kazilski Mondays at 1 p.m. for the trip of a lifetime.
This is Adel Kazilski Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov, Mishenechnas Adar, Marbim Besimcha. When we enter the month of Adar, we need to be happy. We need to increase in our happiness, our joy, to know that God runs this world and all is good with us, albeit that we look after the world and it doesn't look so good. Know that it is good and there is a plan and that there is a direction for everything that is happening to us. And again, fortuitously, we're going to see that in the Chumash, in the five books of Moses, that we are learning today. Last week, thank God, we finished up the Parsha of Boy, and we are starting a brand new Parsha, the Parsha of Beshalach, that is going to start with chapter 13. It's in the middle of a chapter, so the chapter 13 of the book of Exodus, verse 17. And just for anybody who does not know, how do we name our Parashiyot? Our Parashiyot are named by the very first word of the verse that we start the Parsha. If it is a word that doesn't have necessarily a meaning or has substantiation, then we'll go to the second word. So if you look in your Chumash at verse 17, it says, Vayehi b'shalach. And it was when we were sent, we were being sent by Pharaoh out of Egypt. So this Parsha becomes the Parsha of B'shalach. In the previous Parsha, the Parsha of Boy, the very first word come, Boy el Paroi, come to Paroi, Boy is a substantive word, and so we use that as the name of the Parsha. And it's not random, it's not something that, you know, just happens to be. Many, many times, just the name of the Parsha encapsulates the idea. So, for example, last Parsha was the Parsha of Boy. Boy is Bet Aleph. Bet Aleph has a gematria, a numerical value of 3. And in here we find the last three plagues. The last three plagues of the 10 plagues is found in Parsha's Boy. Parsha's B'shalach is all about sending away. This is the place where we are really going to achieve our full redemption. It is full of wondrous miracles. It's a very, very exciting Parsha. It has a lot of lessons that we can learn, and I'm super excited that I am sharing them with you. So relax, open up your Chumash if you're not driving, and let's start going through it. As always, love to communicate with you. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, 34519 is our SMS line. 061-895-1019 is our Telegram number. Right, let's get stuck in. And it's actually quite a very, very interesting couple of verses where we will learn a lot on how to behave. Vayehi b'shalach paro et ha'am. And it was that Pharaoh had let the people go. Ve'lo nacham Elokim derech eretz plishtim. But God did not lead them by the way of the land of the plishtim, of the Philistines. Ki karov hu, even though it was shorter. Ki amar Elokim, because God said, pen yinachem ha'am bir'otam milchama. The people might change their minds when they encounter war. Shavu Mitzrayma, and they will return back to Egypt. So anybody who has looked at a map and has followed the journeys of the Jewish people will go and see that if they went a roundabout way, this was it. You know, we all know today geographically from Egypt to Israel is a very, very short, very, very, very short trip. It's not very, very far. But here we're going to go see that the Jews wandered around in the desert for 40 years. And interestingly, I just got myself a beautiful, beautiful book. I encourage all of you to get it. It is an arm and a leg. They are available at our local Jewish bookstore. It's called The Book of Jewish Knowledge. I bought it because it's a top, a coffee table book. It's something that you will look at again and again and again. And I've only started moseying my way through. I think there's 1,200 pages. It's really, really a lot, and it describes so much about our Jewish heritage. And for me, what speaks the most is the beautiful, beautiful pictures that they had. So somewhere towards the beginning, they have a map of Israel, and then they have the Negev Desert, and then it goes down to the Sinai Desert, and then to the left, you can see Egypt and what was called in the olden days the land of Goshen. And it actually pictorially shows you how the Jews traveled through the desert for 40 years. And when you see it pictorially, and unfortunately I can't show this to you over the radio waves, but to try and explain to my best, you will see that they were in Egypt, okay? They left Egypt, and then they went to a couple of places until they came to the Red Sea. The Red Sea is southwest of the Sinai Desert, okay? And they went through the places of Ramses, Sukkot, Etam, Migdal, and they arrived at the sea. And that's where they felt that they were stuck and they could not move any further. And then very, very interestingly, what I didn't know is they entered the sea and they came out of the sea in the same place, not in the exact same place, a little further north of where they went out. So the sea split. Everybody, and I was under that impression too, was that they crossed over a sea. They didn't. They went into the sea. They took a sharp turn northward and they came out a little bit higher, and we're going to explore that a little bit more. But when we look now in the Chumash, we can see that it says that a few things which are a little bit enigmatic, that Pharaoh let the people go. Well, hello, did we not learn that God got the people out, that he caused all the miracles? Why does it say that Pharaoh didn't let them go? And then why did they meander downwards, like away from Israel, as opposed to going upwards towards Israel? And the answer in this verse 17 says, God did not lead them by way of the Philistines, although it was shorter. The Philistines were sitting along the Mediterranean Sea, and they would actually eventually land up at Raphia and Gaza, like along that border. Because why? The people might change their minds when they encounter war and return to Egypt. Both those are enigmatic and not really making too much sense right now. So I want you to stay tuned. And right after this break, we are going to start dissecting this verse.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
This is Adel Kulski, and this is Mystical Text. And we asked two questions just before the break. Why does the Torah go and say that Pharaoh took them out of Egypt? Heck no. We know that God had to create a lot of miracles to take us out of Egypt, and Pharaoh did not want to let us go out of Egypt. So the question is, why do we say that? And the second is God was taking them away around, not around the shortest path, because they might be scared from war. Well, let's just answer a little bit while we're on the idea of war. Why would the Jews have been frightened when they left Egypt? Who was coming to war against them? Well, initially, nobody. There will be. But if you recall in previous podcasts, at a previous show, we spoke about the fact that there was somewhat of a bit of a dispute as to when the Egyptian bondage finished. And the tribe of Ephraim had miscalculated the time by 30 years. They got all riled up. They decided to leave. And they escaped from Egypt, and they made their way up the way they should have, along the Mediterranean Sea to Raphia, to Gaza, and into the land of of Israel. But they didn't get very far because they had to cross the land of the Plishtim, the Philistines, and they had a dispute there about water and whatnot. And before you knew it, the entire tribe of Ephraim was massacred. There were only 10 people that survived that massacre that came back to Egypt to tell them that in fact all their brethren had in fact died. And what we see, why we understand that God actually gave them a diversion, meaning the Jews went down, further down, kind of like into Africa, as opposed to be going up towards Israel, was that God did not want the Israelites to see that their brethren had been killed. It was 30 years later, but the Midrash tells us that the bones of the Ephraimites were still littered along the roadside. And if he would bring them through the land of Plishtim, they would see the remains of that earlier war. They would see the skeletons of their kinsmen lying along the side road, and they would become completely and hysterically terrified and believing somewhat that this is going to be their own fate, and they would go back. I mean, you can go and argue they did know about it because 10 Ephraimites managed to survive and came back to Egypt, but there is a difference between hearing about something and seeing about something. That's something that we can attest to today. We've all heard about the massacres of October 7th, but speak to anybody who has seen the aftermath of October 7th. It has a far, far more profound effect on them. So for them to see the skeletons of thousands of their brethren lying in the fields would completely break their spirit. And they would just simply, like human beings, just run away and go back. I just want to add in verse 18 and then go understand why does it say that Pharaoh took them out of Egypt? Because, nope, we know God did. Let's just look at verse 18. But Yisav Elokim et ha'am derech ha'mitbar. God made the people take a roundabout route, which was by the way of the Red Sea desert. Ve'chamushim anu b'nei Yisrael be'eretz Yisrael. The Israelites left armed from Egypt. They actually had armed themselves, which is another question now as to why they had to arm themselves. Right, let's go back full circle since everybody is traveling in the wrong direction. Let's go back to the beginning where we said that God took them away from the land of the Plishtim because he did not want them to see the bones of their brethren. What do we learn over here? We learn that we must go out of our way, as God did, to avoid doing wrong. You know, many times people do not have the sensitivity to stop people from going in harm's way. As a Jew, we have to be very, very careful that we do everything that is absolutely possible to avoid them from doing wrong. Now we see it by God himself not letting the Israelites take the most direct route because they might consider going back to Egypt. Well, we can then argue, what do you mean that they might go back to Egypt? And then where is the free will of the people to choose if they do want to go back to Egypt? You know, there is a massive, massive discussion about what is God run and what is in our realm? And in truth, okay, what we see is that God, we know, is omnipotent. There is nothing that he doesn't know. But at the same time, he gave us free will. So there is a sense of purpose. There is a sense of direction. There is direction. There is purpose to everything that is happening around us. God is guiding our steps in every single way. So where is our free will? Our free will is in the circumstances that we get, in the setting that we find ourselves. Do we choose good or bad? So it says, Hakol bidei shamayim, everything is in the hands of heaven, ela yirat shamayim, except for the fear of heaven, which means that I do not have any jurisdiction on how long I will live, which parents I was born to, where, which place I'm living in, which everything that, that I've received in my life, wherever I find my life, I've had no jurisdiction on them. My jurisdiction, however, is in that which God has given me or not given me. How do I react to the circumstance at hand? So when it says that God said that the people might return to Egypt, that is showing that he was giving them the ability, the freedom to choose. Because if we knew that it was in hard stone, it would have said that they would definitely return and they would no longer then have choice. But still then, there's this interplay, this hierarchy of our understanding our reality from God's perspective and then also from Hashem's perspective. So from our perspective, we have free choice and we have the ability to decide what to do with the circumstances that we have received. From God, from God's perspective, he is guiding us and he is giving us all that is needed for us to thrive. And what was not known to the Jews is that there was still more punishment to come to the Egyptians, as we know now in hindsight through history, that there was the miracle of the splitting of the sea, where there will be a finality to the Egyptians, and there was the ability for the Jews eventually to realize that they will never, ever go back. Even now, in the state that they were, there must have been some type of anxiety that you're going into the unknown and you're not sure what is going to happen to you. So God did have his plan. He wanted them to come to the Red Sea. Yes, it was a complete detour going south instead of north. But we wanted God to bring them down to the Red Sea so that he could drown all the Egyptians at the sea. He also wanted to tempt the Egyptians, and they did fall for that bait. He wanted to tempt them to pursue the Israelites so that the stage could be set for the miracle of the parting of the Red Sea. So that's the first idea that we learned, that look how much effort God put in. Number one, not to give any extraneous worry or anxiety, and to make sure that the Jews won't do wrong or to see what happened to others who did wrong. We need to look at that also. And then, of course, there is the idea that God anyway is planning everything, and there was a very big plan for the splitting of the Red Sea. Let's discuss now why it said in verse 17 that Pharaoh let the Jews out of Egypt. What was the exact words? Vayehi b'shalach paro et ha'am. And it was when Pharaoh let the Jews go. What is this really saying? Well, initially, as the angel of death had struck at 12, we know that Pharaoh came in his pajamas in the middle of the night looking for Moses and Aaron, and he told them to get out. And he personally then oversaw that they left. And not only did he see that they actually left the country, but that he personally escorted them when they left Egypt. He also, says the Midrash, asked them to pray for him. The reason, I mean, he wasn't completely altruistic. He escorted them because he figured now, oh boy, 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 my country is in such a mess. He was hoping that if he escorts them, he would be able to entice them to pray for him. Because after all, from Pharaoh's perspective, where were the Jews going? They were going to pray. Remember, they were going to pray for 3 days in the desert. Listen, this guy was a bad guy. He was an absolutely evil guy. But he showed a little bit of common sense. And some say in the commentary that God repaid Parod for this single good deed. And how did he do that? He gave him a commandment that we have in Deuteronomy in chapter 23, verse 8, where it says, do not abhor an Egyptian when you were a guest in his land. So we're not allowed to show any hatred to towards the Egyptians because we were guests in the land, and said that came from God repaying Pharaoh for his 1 minute of sanity. The Midrash goes on and says that, in fact, the Egyptian aristocrats accompanied the Israelites until they came to Etam, okay, which is three places down. They went from Ramses to Sukkot to Etam, and Pharaoh and his men went along with the Israelites until they left Egypt. Pharaoh also sent many of his officials to accompany them on the way. But again, the Midrash asks an obvious question. Bilam, who was the chief sorcerer, a good-for-nothing, who was responsible for the boys being thrown into the Nile River, okay, was responsible for convincing Pharaoh with all these bad decrees. When he saw the Jews later, he ran away. Okay? When he ran away, remember, he was, again, let's just give a bit of background. He was a chief occultist. He was a chief advisor. He had tried his damnedest to do anything that he knew from sorcery to prevent the Jews from leaving Egypt. Obviously, despite his best efforts, he failed. And he ran and he secluded himself, this is Balaam, in a retreat in what was called, I'm sure this is metaphoric, the Mountains of Darkness, where the Midrash says the place is inhabited by Uzzah and Uzziel, the angels of darkness. And he remained there for 50 days from the Exodus until the revelation at Sinai. He tried to denounce Israel on high, and his efforts were in vain. Little later, Bilam is employed by the Moabite king Balak to go and curse the Jews. And, of course, we all know that when he got to the top of the mountain, he's the guy with the talking donkey. When he got to the top of the mountain and he looked down on the settlement of Israel, he quoted the famous words, Matovu Ohalecha Yaakov Mishkanotecha Israel Hagudli O Your Tents Yaakov, and the dwelling places of Israel. Okay, he landed up blessing us, not cursing us. So the Midrash goes and says that even Bilam, wicked, wicked, good for nothing, Bilam, says in the book of Numbers in Bamidbar, okay, when he's cursing the Jewish people, God brought them out of Egypt. Even he recognized God brought them out of Egypt. So our initial question is, again, how can we say that Pharaoh sent the people forth? Okay? So there's a few answers to this whole thing. Okay? One part of the Midrash says that the Torah gave credit to Pharaoh because he accompanied the Israelites. Okay? Then there is the idea that this was part of Pharaoh's downfall, that Pharaoh could never go and say, well, they left Egypt because God took them out. I took them out. Well, if you took them out, you're going to suffer the repercussions of it. And he does. He actually has Harota and he starts trying to run back. Okay. So Pharaoh had gone really, really far to escort them, thinking they were going to come back in 3 days, but truthfully knew the intentions behind them leaving Egypt. Now, we learned further in the verse, okay, the second part of verse 18, Vechachamushim Anu B'nei Israel Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that the Jews armed themselves. They formed like kind of like a military corps. They had a tzahal over there, and they were preparing for war. Well, who was wanting to war with them? Apparently, Ammon and Moab and Amalek had made a mutual treaty to wage a war against them, but God managed to make them abandon their war efforts for the meantime. But when we go and look at the word chamushim, okay, there is a little bit of an interplay on those words, and on this word particularly, we can interpret it in quite a few ways. So it's not just a simple thing that they armed themselves, okay? They armed themselves like men going for the war, but they actually, the word hamushin comes to teach us certain other ideas that we are going to delve into. But for that, you're going to have to wait as we go for a break. And as soon as we get back, we will continue. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
Chai FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
All right, so let us work out, what does hamushim mean? Well, firstly, if you look at the word hamushim, you will go and see that hamushim is, as we've said, meaning that the Israelites were armed, but it can also be interpreted to mean that they were hamushim, they were one-fifth. And this alludes to the fact, and we've spoken about it before, that only a fifth of the Israelites actually left Egypt. If you recall, we said four-fifths of the Jews died during the days of darkness. And according to one opinion, it's an outside opinion, says only one Israelite out of 500,000 actually left Egypt. So that is that. Now, why did they arm themselves? The reason why they armed themselves, just by the way, was that, and this is another lesson, and this is something that is very applicable today, we Jews do not rely on miracles. We are commanded to function in this world. We are commanded to function within the realm of reality. And we can't expect a suspension of nature and a miracle to fall every time we are in trouble. You know, King Solomon, the wisest of all men, said, "The horse is prepared for the time of war, but victory belongs to God." And this is exactly like a very, very, very profound saying. Right? Hamas attacked us on October 7th. We go out to war. Okay? We have to do what we have to do. If we are victorious, that is in the hands of God. And similarly, what happened with the Jews in the desert? They did take necessary precautions. They had known about the Ephraimites. Excuse me. The Ephraimites, they knew about them. They knew what had happened to them. They were sure that people were going to attack them. So this time they weren't going to be burnt. They took all the necessary equipment ready for a time of war, but they understood that the ultimate victor would depend wholly and solely on God. And so should we. We have to do what we have to do right now to keep away our enemy. Unfortunately, even with sacrifices, and know that if we are successful, then it is certainly because God gave us that success. So hamushim is indicative of one-fifth of the people leaving. Hamushim, okay, if you are sitting and looking into a chumash, hamushim is written without a vav. Okay, it should be chet mem vav shin yud mem. It's written chet mem shin yud mem. So you could read it as chamishim, which means 50, which is a hint that they went out because in 50 days they were going to receive and they were going to merit the receiving of the Torah. So there is a little bit of an interplay over there on the word chamushim. One other hint to the word chamushim is that chamushim, we know also, and we've spoken about it before, that albeit that there were maybe 12 million Jews that left Egypt, we worked it out, 3 million men, there was 5 to 1 of men, of women and children, so we were on about 12 million, but then we had the mixed multitude, the Arab Rav, those were all Egyptians who figured it's better to bet on our horse than theirs because their whole economy and everything had collapsed. And what we see over there is that Chamushim means that not only were only one-fifth of us left, but that there were five times more Erev Rav than the Jewish people. Now we are going to go learn another profound lesson, and that is the lesson of always keeping a promise. Always, if you have taken an oath and said the words, I promise, you need to ensure that you fulfill that promise in its entirety. If you can't, you have to legally go and unbind yourself from that oath. And what promise are we talking about? We're talking about the promise that the Jews had made to Yosef, to Joseph, to take his bones out of Egypt. Let's look in verse 19. Vayikach Moshe et atzmot Yosef mo. God took Joseph's bones with him. Ki hashbeah hishbia et bnei Yisrael. Because the Jewish people had hashbeah hishbia. You can see the word is twice conjugated differently, which is a sign of emphasis. They completely and utterly promised. They swore to take it out. Le'emor saying, Pakod yifkod elokim etchem. When Hashem will remember you, Ve'alitem et atzmotai mizeh etchem. This is what Joseph said, that when God will remember you, then you must bring my bones out of here with you. Joseph actually gave that oath, bound that oath to his brothers, and he instructed his brothers to pass on that oath and make it binding on all his brothers' descendants. So now it was the time of the going of Egypt. We did speak how Moshe pulled his coffin out from the River Nile, but here we can see that they are emphasizing again to ensure that if you have made a promise, then you keep the promise. Now, if you look at the word pakod yifkad, remember, you will remember. If you remember, the Jews were supposed to be in Egypt for 400 years. They only remained there for 200 years. If you look at the first word pakod, and I'm going to save you because it's really, really the middle of the day. I'm not sure how many people are able to count, but pakod is 190. 400 years where we're supposed to stay, minus 210 years, which really stayed, is a value of 190. And it was thus as if Joseph had said 190 years earlier, pakod, 190 years earlier, yifkod, I will make you remember me. Okay, so that is really, really important. And just to put a little bit more context around the whole thing about keeping an oath, you can just imagine the hurry, the confusion. They didn't, when they were leaving Egypt, they didn't even have time to prepare provisions. Okay, but they did, and they forgot about food. They had to eat matzah in the desert. It was a balagan of a leaving. It was like just get your suitcase and leave, ASAP. Nevertheless, whilst they were so involved and there was so much confusion, so much hurry, they did not forget about Yosef's remains. And that's where we learn that violating an oath is indeed, the sin is very, very, very grave. So they gave, by the way, that command, that honor to Moses. He was the one that was responsible for the Exodus, and so he was the one to see to it, and he knew that they could not go unless they had Moses's bones. And furthermore, and more importantly, it was a very great honor that it was Moses himself that looked after the bones of Joseph.
IFM 101.9 megahertz of life.
And just to round up and have a look at Joseph, one of the interesting things is that two things about I just wanted to mention, actually. The first is not only were Joseph's remains taken out of Egypt, but so were the rest of Jacob's sons. They were also carried out of Egypt, tells the Midrash. But what's interesting is they talk about Joseph's bones. Okay. It is a known idea in Judaism that the bodies of tzaddikim, of holy people, do not decay, and that their bodies remain whole the day they were buried. Okay. And Joseph, we know, was a ruler. His body had been thoroughly embalmed. So why are they talking about his bones as opposed to his body? And the answer is that Joseph himself had prayed that his body decay. He, as we all know, had been a ruler for many, many years, and he felt that he had certainly committed many misdeeds. So he wanted that his body should decay and that that would be an atonement for all his sins. And now this concept is connected to the previous verse where we learned that the Jews actually left Egypt armed. Why? Because the Israelites had prepared for war. They were concerned that when the time for the redemption, that the time for the redemption had not come, they would suffer the same fate as the Ephraimites. But now when they see Moses takes Yosef's bones with them, it was clear proof to them that the time had come, because for sure, Joseph wouldn't have left until it was time for the going, for leaving out. So this was like a proof to them, you can go out, you can arm yourselves, it's okay, you're definitely leaving, and you're definitely not coming back. And we're going to finish on one last verse. The first day they traveled from Sukkot, and they went to Etam. So they've been to three places, Ramses, then they went to Sukkot, now they've arrived in Etam, and this journey took place on the 16th of Nisan, which was the second day of Pesach, and because on the first day of Pesach, they traveled from Ramses to Sukkot. That is where we are going to stop our journeying today. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope it's been enlightening, and I hope it's been somewhat entertaining, and most importantly, that it's educational, and that you have an appreciation of learning the original text of Torah. Till next time, this is Adel Kozlowski signing off. This is 101.9 High FM.